Welcome to the first of our off-season prospect deep dives going through all 30 farm systems. Today we are kicking it off with the Cincinnati Reds. Alongside me is my typical co-host of the Prospect Podcast. That would be JJ Cooper. JJ, you've been doing the Reds for quite a while. Welcome to the show and welcome to Prospect Podcast Top 30 season. A lot of work to do over the next month or two.
We're flipping it just to let everyone know. So Jeff's hosting because I'm the one who does our Reds top 30. Then we'll flip this. You'll see me hosting Jeff before long, but we're also going to bring in everyone else who does our 30s. Our plan could be up, but is to release four of these a week. Not this week. This week we're starting midweek, but starting next week. By next week, we'll be rolling out four of these a week, so that we can hopefully be done with all of them basically around the start of spring training games. So no matter who your organization is, don't worry, we will get to them. But we are starting off with the Cincinnati Reds, an organization I've very much enjoyed doing back from the days before. I think Joey Votto was in the first top 30 that I wrote up for the Reds back at a time when the Reds had a policy that Joey Votto, I remember in the report, it was like, they don't allow their hitters to swing at the first pitch. So Joey Votto took generally strike one every plate appearance for like months, because in Class A, you had to take a pitch before you were allowed to swing.
And that's sort of remarkable, especially if you had evaluated or watched Joey Votto, knowing the sort of plate approach that Votto possessed. I mean, even kind of coming into pro ball, that they would force him to do something like that. But, you know, unusual things that sometimes we see as challenges within the early stages of a professional career. But let's jump in a little bit to the system here. We're going to follow a similar sort of template throughout all these different podcasts. The first, though, is let's get into the decision at one. Some talented players in terms of the top five here. How difficult was that decision to rank Sal Stewart at one?
I would say this one's not a particularly difficult one because, I mean, when we do these, right, you're looking at the combination of, we're looking at long-term value. And when it comes to something like that, you're looking at proximity to the big leagues is valuable for that. A guy like Sal Stewart, who was batting cleanup in a playoff game for the Reds last year. So he's as close to being a graduate as you could be without having graduated for prospect status. And then you say, okay, well, what can he be? And I would say that if you compare him to the other guys who are in consideration, other guys at the top of this rankings for the Reds, he does have less defensive value. I don't think there's any question about that. If you want defensive value, I would say Duno, who is big but is a catcher, Tyson Lewis, Steele Hall, very much have more defensive value than Sal Stewart. But as a pure hitter, I think it was a pretty clear answer there. And I expect, I mean, like, I think that Sal Stewart should be one of the better hitters in the Reds lineup in 2026. Now, I think it'll be at first base more than at third base. I know he's played some third, he's played some second. I know he's talked in the offseason about trying to slim down a little bit to try to improve his defense. That will help. The big thing that you know, I've written about at Baseball America, we'll put it in the show notes, he doesn't have an arm to play third base. His hardest throw, we have track throws from every throw he made in the majors and every throw in AAA. And if you said, here's kind of like the floor of big league third baseman and they're throwing their max throws and their average throws, Sal Stewart's here. He's in the 70s. And you really, to make the plays, like to make that play where you go to your left, plant your foot and then throw it. You've got to have at least an average, if not an above average arm to make that play consistently. And it's a well below average arm. So from that standpoint, that's a concern. But as a hitter, you know, I want to get what you think too, you know, like you've obviously evaluated Stewart too. As a hitter, I feel really good about his pure hitting ability. And there's some real power there. Last year, the big thing that he kind of unlocked last year, and this is a fun development step, which is he's always been a good hitter. But last year, Stewart figured out, 2025 now that we're here in 26, he figured out how, if you're coming in on me, I can get the bat head out and I can pull the ball for power. That had always been kind of the the big question, because if he's going to be a first baseman, you don't want a guy who just hits the ball to the opposite field. He's always had some oppo power, but oppo power is not going to be as consistently productive at the big league level as pull power. He showed that ability to develop pull power to go with it. Throw that into Great American Ballpark for a team that really could use pure hitters who also can hit for power, because they haven't had a lot of power in recent years. That's a really good fit, and I kind of expect him to kind of stand out that way. What do you like about South Stewart, or is there things that really concern you?
No, I think as you talk through the profile a little bit, it kind of, you know, rang a bell in my head that it's a lot like he was very similar in terms of his profile to like what Blaze Jordan is. But I think was always a tick better, a little bit better of a hitter, a little bit better approach, a little bit more game power. But I think sort of like a similar profile where like this guy's a good hitter. He's got a lot of power. You look at the big body. He's obviously limited defensively in some way, shape or form. I think by Jordan and a little bit with Stewart, it's range. The arm for Jordan, much better than it is for Stewart. That's a big differentiator between the two. But he was a guy that, you know, Jordan and Stewart that kind of had that oppo swing where a lot of the power, the hard hit balls were always to the opposite field, which is really good for driving batting average, but kind of limits what that power upside is. Stewart adding some raw power, you know, onto the profile, swinging a little bit more aggressive this year, I think even in the beginning part of the season, and then eventually unlocking that pull side power stroke, I think really does a lot of, you know, lifting to get him up to this spot. And it makes a lot of sense. And he's also a guy, and I think we got to sometimes consider this, a bat-first prospect in San Francisco versus a bat-first prospect in Cincinnati is very different. And the landing spot is a lot cushier, you know, for that kind of a player. You know, a Spencer Steer can have, you know, a 20-plus home run year and be a productive guy just based on counting stats versus, you know, maybe somebody with similar skills that was playing in San Francisco or St. Louis or some of these parks where the ball doesn't fly as much. So I do think just because of it's being the Reds and Great America Ballpark, a hitter like Stewart has a little bit higher floor than what we anticipate. And you look at this top five, there's three outliers, I think, within it, but all guys that have major question marks, whether it's defensively or how the bat's going to track, and Duno, Tyson Lewis, and then Steele Hall. I think they all have, you know, their fans. They all have their detractors for a reason. You know, it's more of a hit tool question with Lewis. And I think Hall just hasn't debuted. And there are some hit tool, just hitting impact questions there. And then Duno, it's the body and the defensive work that, you know, you kind of find yourself in a conversation of like, yeah, I could see Duno hitting more home runs than Stewart at peak. But is he a better hitter when, you know, defensively, if he's not a catcher, all that's sort of negated. So it's an interesting conversation, I think, within this top five. But clearly for me, I still support Stewart at one, even though I may like the upside of some of the other guys in the top 10 a little bit more.
I do think you hit it that well, which is that we try to always balance this. We'd have, if you go to baseballamerica.com, we have the BA grades with risk, right? And there are players in this top five who have a higher grade for a ceiling, a projected potential outcome than Stewart, or right at that same level, but just more risk. Because as you said, like Sal Stewart, I to answer a question that I probably will get from at least one Reds fan after we do this, if you're comparing Sal Stewart to, say, Christian Encarnacion-Strand, who was looked to be potentially the first base a couple years ago, kind of made his debut, then had a really kind of an injury plague, but also kind of a rough season last year. The key difference here, because this is bat first corners, it's a high bar that you've got to clear as a hitter. Sal Stewart's just a much more pure hitter. He's a more selective hitter. He understands the strike zone more. And those kind of Christian Encarnacion-Strand hits the ball a lot harder at his best. Like his raw power is exceptional, but he also just swings as the ball's coming. He's like, he's made his decision to swing a lot of times as the ball's coming out of the hand. Sal Stewart's a much more selective hitter, gets better pitches to hit. I think that the likelihood of Sal Stewart being a long-term productive hitter are better, are significantly better. I can't help but think to go back to an analogy for a player. Sal Stewart's a different hitter than Jesse Winker, but where he was coming into last year, I'd say was kind of Jesse Winker-esque in that with Jesse Winker, when he was in the minors, there was always I remember talking to Reds officials that are like, when he gets to Great American Ballpark, he'll have power. When he gets to Great American Ballpark, he'll have power. He was always an oppo guy. He never developed that ability to pull it. But if you said with Jesse Winker's career, he had power when he was at Great American Ballpark. And then when he left, it was like the power just kind of left with it, you know? So
yeah,
it is
100%. So let's move on to the next question here in the show. And that is, looking back year over year, how is this system better or worse than in 2024 going into 2025?
I would say that the key thing that's worse is Chase Burns is no longer eligible on this list. And Chase Burns was the best pitching prospect that the Reds had. I would say so if you want to say that the pitching wise, it's worse, I would say there's no doubt about that. Because again, you had Chase Burns at the top. Not only that, but Rhett Lauder came into this past year's top 30 as a player who was just on the cusp of graduating, who you expected to be in the Reds rotation for much of 2025. Instead, he had an oblique issue in spring training, multiple issues that meant that while he got back on the mound a couple of times, it really wasn't until the Arizona Fall League that we saw a healthy Rhett Lauder. Zero big league innings in 2025. He's still on the top five. You know, clearly he's number three, but one of Rhett Lauder's biggest, arguments for him coming into the year was so durable, had never really had a significant injury, or didn't have a cut on elbow, didn't have a shoulder injury of significant anything like that, but he did miss almost an entire season. So he's a little bit diminished, I would say, as a prospect, just a little bit by that. At the same time, I would say that this system is more balanced now. We talked about a little bit. You talked about, Duno was the best hitter in the Florida State League for much of last year, coming off of two injury plague seasons before that. Tyson Lewis really kind of popped a little bit. Does look like a very intriguing kind of power speed type guy. Steele Hall, who they just drafted, very athletic. But even going beyond that, Edwin Arroyo came off of a shoulder injury that really kind of ruined his 2024 season. I don't think he's going to be a star or anything like that, but he looks like he could be a good utility infielder. He did play all of 25. Really good kind of contact skills, just not a whole lot of power. Maybe some more of that power comes back year two after the shoulder injury. There's guys you don't want to forget about. Julian Aguiar missed all of last year with Tommy John surgery, but, should be part of their big league club at some point in 26. Jose Franco kind of had an emerging year after him also having Tommy John surgery at one point. I would just say that the depth of this system now is a little bit more balanced. There's a little bit more of that mixture of bats and, and pitchers that was a little pitcher heavy, I would say. And, I would say that, again, draftees and all as well, but the graduation of Burns, it kind of ends up being pretty similar to what it was because of kind of that you take a step forward here, you take a step back here. The guy that I think we probably should talk about that you've seen for a long time that, I'm sure we're going to get questions of, but along those lines is Cam Collier also had a very injury-plagued season, missed the first half of the year, came back in better shape, like really did seem to embrace the chance to kind of, take that time to kind of get in good shape. But at the same time, that also meant he's kind of been moving up with Sal Stewart just right alongside each other. He missed enough time. Sal Stewart reaches the big leagues. Collier is a year away, maybe reaches in 26, is really a first baseman at the end of the day as well. So from that standpoint, Collier's kind of path to the big leagues might be a little tougher now because Sal Stewart has gotten kind of to that position first. And again, maybe a slim down Sal Stewart becomes more regularly a second baseman for the Reds in 26, I'm still inclined to think it's probably going to be more at first base. If it's a second base, then Collier can play first down the road. If it's at first, that's going to be a little bit tougher.
And that is the struggle with a player like Collier, because in a lot of ways, he's not dissimilar from Stewart. I think Stewart's hit tool, like forget even the approach, just the pure, rudimentary definition of a hit tool, the bat to ball skills were always maybe two grades better than what Collier's were. There's swing and miss in this profile, and it's swing and miss without a lot of loft in his swing. That combination does concern me a little bit because one of the things that this guy I think needs to do besides obviously make more contact is to hit the ball in the air more frequently and to hit the ball in the air to his pull side, which is not something that, he's done with any regularity. His launch angle to his pull side this year, by the way, JJ, 0.2. It wasn't even 1 degree. It was 0.2 degrees. So more often than not, he's hitting the ball at negative launch angles, or just about, maybe a little bit less than more often than not, but negative launch angles. And, you know, you sort of look at the barrel rate, which isn't bad. Their impact stuff isn't bad, but it's because when he does lift the ball, he hits the ball pretty hard consistently. The power isn't a question with Collier. I think there's plus raw. It's just, do you think he can get to it in two regards, the angles and the contact? There's good swing decisions and there's good raw power. He's limited as a defender. He's a prospect that I've had questions on for a long time, but I think it's really started to crystallize as he's gotten a little bit older.
He has stretches. Watched a lot of Cam Collier plate appearances over the last few years. He'll have stretches. He'll have a week where everything's synced up and he's really driving the ball. Like, he'll have a week you see four home runs and you're like, wow, is it clicking for him? And then he'll 2 weeks later be rolling over everything. And it's like, oh, he's out of sync. When his, I feel like the way I would put it is it's a higher maintenance swing so far, where it's really hard for him to stay on top of it where everything's clicking. And when it's not, it gets really ugly. And when it's going well, it looks really good. So if you see him in the right week, you're like, wow, this is really looking good. And you see him in the wrong week, you're like, what is going on here? Sal Stewart, to just bring it back to that, is a guy where you're just like, yep, just looks like this. You know, like, it's just day after day, it looks pretty consistently like, oh, this is who Sal Stewart is.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the next question here as we start to wrap up the video version of this show. Sal Stewart, more likely than not, is going to graduate this year outside of a catastrophic injury. That's me knocking on wood for you Reds fans out there. Who is your guess to be number one next year, JJ? I think you have some interesting conversations here because you can kind of eliminate two of the top five right from the rip.
Like you said, I don't think that Stewart or Lauder, it would be hard for them to be number one. Stewart could be, like, if he's like suffered a freak injury in spring training, knock on wood, that'll be dozen. But like, where it's like, this isn't going to affect him long term, but he missed the whole year. Rhett Lauder can't. Like, there's no scenario where Rhett Lauder both doesn't graduate from rookie status and is good enough to be the number one prospect. He's either going to be hurt, and in that case, he won't be number one, or he will graduate this year. He already pitched in the big leagues in 2024. So take those two out. Then it gets really interesting. Like, I would say the logical choices is Alfredo Duno, who definitely will not graduate this year. I don't think there's any chance that he's going to graduate, reach the big leagues in 2026. He is a massive catcher, as we said, great plate discipline, big power. I would say, like, he is exploitable by quality pitching to an extent, long levers, big swing, all that. But he knows how to do it well enough that he doesn't get exploited very often. I would say that the real concern you hit on there is every year is going to be, we've seen guys like Alfredo Duno is not as big. He's taller, much more physically massive. But as far as like how he carries weight, this is not Alejandro Kirk right here.
No.
So, and Alejandro
Kirk is an offensive line,
good big league catcher.
Yeah, right. He grows up in Louisiana. This is just he's playing guard for the Tigers.
If you're trying to make a best hope scenario here, it's a Salvador Perez type body. Just this massive catcher who we've seen him basically he's at the size he's going to stay at for the next, because Salvi, to his credit, was always a big catcher, and he's just kind of stayed at this level of size for like 15 years. If Duno can do that, then you're talking about your problem number one. I would say of the other guys, I would say Tyson Lewis has a better chance than Steele Hall. Steele Hall is a safer prospect. Steele Hall, I think, is a surefire shortstop, really can run, really athletic. You touched on it. How much impact is he going to make offensively? How strong is he going to get? All that. There's a big question about where Tyson Lewis will end up playing defensively. You can find guys who think he'll be shortstop. Not many. You can definitely find people who think he'll be third base. You can find probably just as many who think that this guy's going to be a really good center fielder one day. But there's real power. I mean, top of the top tier power. We saw EVs from him last year that were exceptional. Like, he was hitting the ball as hard as anybody. We talk about Alfredo. You know, Tyson Lewis hits the ball as hard, if not harder.
Yeah, it's James Wood, boom, boom.
It's Woodsian. It's that kind of power. And the hit tool's getting better. Like, there was a lot of questions with it. There still are questions. He's an A-ball. But he's showing the ability to make improvements there. That would be right now my sneaky guess of who could be number one. I will say also with this, probably not going to be the first round pick because the Reds, credit to them, they made the playoffs. So the Reds are picking 18th in the MLB draft. And I don't think a guy they take 18th is necessarily going to jump straight to the top of their prospect. I would say if I'm a Reds fan, I would hope that he won't, because that's not going to be a top 100 prospect guy they take at 18th probably.
Yeah. So, you know, an interesting group. But let's bring up the last question here on the podcast, video version of the podcast, pardon me. And that is, what are the Reds good at developing, JJ?
I would say that you have to say, if you look at recent years pitching, now they have some hitters and all too, but they produced Ellie. Like, okay, so that they're great at producing shortstops who grow 4 inches after they sign while getting stronger, faster, and more athletic. That's a hard demographic to master. Oh, by the way, who have twin brothers too? How about that? Like, that's a pretty small subset. Yes, we got Ellie on the wall right back there. So that's okay. But something that's more replicable. You look at their rotation, right? Hunter Green, Nicola Bilodolo, Andrew Abbott, who I would say, Andrew Abbott, let's show some respect to Andrew Abbott. Like, that guy just year after year is really productive, really solid. And that doesn't, you know, you can go beyond that, right? Like, the Reds, as we record this, I could map out, because we also got to remember guys like Brandon Williamson. They did acquire in a trade, but Brandon Williamson coming back from TJ, Julian Aguiar coming back from TJ, Chase Petty, who they traded for when he was in A-ball, but reached the majors, will be in AAA to start the year, I would expect again. This is a team that has 10 starting pitchers who will be in the majors or AAA or maybe in the big league bullpen, but could swing into that role, maybe a Jose Franco in a role like that. Even that's not even counting a guy like Graham Ashcraft, who has started for them, but now is pretty much a reliever. That's not counting. You could really kind of look at their bullpen, and it's got a number of those guys who were starters, but Tony Santion type guys, like, who've moved to the pen. But this is a team that, and most of those guys, a couple of guys were acquired in trades, but a lot of those guys are homegrown drafted, homegrown developed. They've done it on the high school side, like a guy like Hunter Green. They've done it on the college side, guys like Lodolo and Abbott. They've done it, you know, in a variety of different ways. And that's not counting, like, again, like guys who, like, they developed Joe Boyle and then traded him. And Joe Boyle has now made starts in, you know, in Oakland, when back was Oakland, and now in Tampa Bay, and could be in the Rays rotation this year. So it's really a team that has produced a significant number of starting pitchers. And, like, when we look at it, even right now, we mentioned Rhett Lauder, who is a guy who we expect to pitch in the big leagues for them in 2026. And I think Chase Petty is another one. And then you go on, like we mentioned, a guy like Jose Franco could be a swingman for them, probably going to be more in their pen, but I think could start games for them if they needed to. That's something that the Reds have made a clear point of emphasis. They've rightfully, I think, made the argument. They did acquire Brady Singer, but they're not a team that's generally going to be competing for the top free agent pitchers. You know, so if they're going to have pitching, especially pitching in Great American Ballpark, they're going to need to develop it. And they've done a really good job. The funny thing about this is, for all this ballpark, if you said, what's the key to success for the Reds, I think in 26, it's not, will they get enough pitching? I think they'll be fine there. It's, can they find some guys to really contribute, to help out? Like, and Ellie will be healthy. I think that'll help a lot, because his power really tailed off once he got hurt last year. But do they have enough bats? You know, can Noelvi Marte become an impactful player for them? Can Sal Stewart kind of do that? Can Tyler Stevenson have a better year? Are they going to have enough offense to go with what looks like a really good pitching staff?
Well said. we're going to wrap up the video portion of the podcast. Now, if you're a podcast listener, stick around. We have more to come.
And if you are watching the video version and you want to hear the additional portion, you can also, the show notes have a link to the podcast as well. So you can check it out if you want to hear the full conversations. We talked a little bit more. I think we're going to dive more into the Reds pitching and how they've kind of gotten to here.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
Yeah, and for our podcast listeners, let's get into that a little bit now. Something we talked about offline was some of the hires that, you know, the Reds had made, say, over the last decade, now that 2020 and 2019 are kind of far away. Kyle Bodey, now with the Red Sox, obviously famous for his work and, you know, founding of Driveline, which I think has really driven the conversation around player development and data and a lot of stuff in our game over the last decade. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what sort of infrastructure he helped put in place that has allowed them to kind of really do a good job on the pitching side of identifying in the amateur side of things, bring those guys in, coming up with a development plan and sort of path that works to get these guys, you know, to the big leagues and a lot of them into the rotation.
So it's interesting again, and I think the Reds have kind of, you know, they've had a lot of turnover the last couple of years, you know, but one of the things that I would say was an interesting philosophy that the Reds had during the time where they produced a lot of these players, right? Because, like, again, if you rewind the clock to kind of the pandemic in 2020, I would say that all of these pitchers that we're talking about that are homegrown were kind of in the farm system at that point. Hunter Green really hadn't established himself at the big league level yet. Andrew Abbott, Nick Lodolo, I think was, you know, that was the year they got drafted. Then again, other guys like Joe Boyle, who, you know, has moved on. Even Luis May. Luis May was part of that, you know, kind of that group who's kind of in their pen now. There was kind of this emphasis of take stuff and let those guys kind of develop. And so if you look at, like, this is, again, I would say that there's more than one way to approach pitching development. It was pretty different, I would say, than some other organizations. Like, if you said, like what the Guardians were doing at that time, it was often acquire, command, and then develop the stuff, right? So you had the Shane Biebers of the world where it's like, hey, this guy can really pitch. If we can add 3 or 4 miles an hour, watch out. And they did. With a number of guys. The Reds' approach was, if you acquire guys who have outlierish stuff, then can we get them to throw enough strikes for it to matter, right? And, I mean, in the extreme examples, we still have some of these to talk about. Zach Maxwell, who basically walked everyone when he was at Georgia Tech, but also threw 100. And is, when we talked about earlier about Alfredo Duno being a big human, Alfredo Duno looks at Zach Maxwell and goes, you know, feels small. in comparison. Zach Maxwell is 300 pounds. I mean, he's a massive human. But it was also guys like Joe Boyle basically never pitched at Notre Dame because every year they would say, oh, this is the year that Boyle's going to kind of get stretched out. And then he would walk a ton of guys, get pulled, and then kind of get buried in the, you know, didn't really get a pitch. And to the extreme example, the guy like Ricky Karcher, who, you know, it's like, okay, he's going to strike out 40% of the batters and he's going to walk 20%. Now let's see what we can do with the, you know, can we change that 20% number? And what they did with a lot of these guys, like with a Boyle, right? When you bring in a guy like that, who has this extreme stuff, who basically, to use the Rays, because I also do the Rays, like this is the kind of guy that you really do just say, we're putting the mitt in the middle of the target and we know you'll never hit the mitt. Like we're going to have to chase it. But the hope is miss, you know, there's aim small, you know, aim small, miss small, aim big, miss big. With Joel's career, it was just like, just get it close to the plate. But the other part with a guy like that was you've also got to kind of let them know this is where pro baseball can help guys develop in a way that it's really hard to develop in college even. In college, you have a 55-game season. You can in fall ball be like, look, if you walk three guys, we're going to let you pitch to the fourth, fifth, and sixth. In games, they don't let you do that. In A ball, you can do that where you can be like, I've watched video of Boyle at the time where you can kind of see like him almost having to deprogram himself, that he would walk a guy and he would look kind of like, are they coming to get me? And it's like, no, they're not coming to get you. Now the next guy and the next five guys are yours. Now they're not going to let you throw, you know, 100 pitches in this inning. But at the same time, it was like, no, we want you to learn how to work through this. And we've seen this. It doesn't always work. Ricky Karcher did reach the big leagues, I think, very briefly. But he's an example of a guy where they never were able to get it to that control to the point where it clicked. But a Joe Boyle is a guy who did. But also on top of that, like Hunter Green wasn't a guy like Joe Boyle. Hunter Green was a guy who had 100 miles an hour in high school and had an idea of where it was going. But even in a guy like him, there was significant development. You remember, I remember, some of those listening remember, Hunter Green had the most hittable 100 mile an hour fastball that you'll ever see when he was in the lower levels of the minors. Like I was at the Futures game one year where he threw 103 and I think it came back out at like 110 because he had that challenge of, okay, it's a pretty straight fastball. It's a clean delivery. You're getting a good look at it. And then to his and the Reds' credit, they developed his arsenal to where his fastball became a little less hittable. But more than that, they developed the arsenal around it to where you couldn't just sit fastball. It's a little bit of an organization that also did a good job of developing kind of all types. What I just described about Joe Boyle and Hunter Green and Ricky Karcher and Zach Maxwell and Luis May, we talked a little earlier about Andrew Abbott being really good. Do any of those descriptions seem to fit to you, Jeff, about Andrew Abbott?
No, he's like the outlier in this system of, good shapes and not like average-ish velocity, because he is a lefty, so I would say it's probably more average-ish. But a guy that really knows how to pitch and execute, and there's deception, there's location. I think this is hard to truly quantify. There's some tunneling aspects of what he does that really work. And despite not having this really big stuff and, you know, the sort of strikeout foundation, he has been able to miss bats and be really successful. And as we talked about in the top of the show with Sal Stewart, a really difficult place to pitch, but a great place to hit. Outside of Colorado, this is probably one of the more unforgiving fields in the game. There's different elements that are at play at each. I think in a lot of ways, he is what we hope Rhett Lauder can become.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, you know, that pitchability guy that maybe gets a little bit more swing and miss than you anticipated. And, you know, can go deep into games. And I mean, he was a really, really valuable starter, full stop this year, regardless of Reds and all that sort of stuff. He would be valuable in anybody's rotation at this point. So I think that's a really interesting sort of component of Abbott. But I also want to move it along to some of these guys kind of in the same vein, like a Boyle, that were these big stuff guys, more on the relief side. They've had some success with those sort of guys as well. Zach Maxwell being one, another that I think has since graduated. I got to check Connor Phillips. There's some of these big stuff guys that they Connor have still Phillips. Got.
If I could interject on that, that's another perfect example of this, right? So they have, Connor Phillips is a guy who was up for them in 24. And when I, 23, actually, I think it was. And when I say he lost the strike zone, like his last outing of that year in the big leagues was one you want to forget. Like one you, it's hard to watch because he just could not throw strikes. I don't remember if I, again, I'm off the top of my head. If memory serves, he didn't get an out. And then he spent a year really just trying to find it. And I mean, we're talking down to the complex level. We're talking, is this guy ever going to be able to be a big league pitcher again? And to his credit and the Reds' credit, the answer is yes. And now you saw him pitching in the postseason for them at the end of 25, which was a pretty remarkable development. And another example of a guy who had has always had stuff. And the question was, would he be able to harness it enough to be an effective pitcher? Kind of like, which fits, if you're producing the Abbotts and all of the world, the great thing is the fallback option on this is, it's a good way to build a bullpen. And you got Tony Santion's another guy who's kind of been a useful bullpen guy for them. You know, we talk about Luis May is another one who, I mean, Luis May throws 103, you know, rolling out of bed at this point. You have that. And then the guy I wanted to kind of talk to, we should probably talk a little bit about, because I don't want to ignore him. He's on that, just has graduated, but also isn't like a fully established big leaguer. We talked about Chase Burns a little bit earlier. Chase Burns, I mean, I think I'm going to be very interested to see kind of how he fits into the plans for 26. And I say how he fits into the plans because I would expect him to be in the rotation. But, you know, again, right now I would say as we stand, we're like Green, Abbott, Lodolo, Brady Singer, who they acquired, who I could see being traded because he's late and is, you know, not too far away from free agency, getting a little expensive, but at the same time, really good. If they do, it would be because, to me, it would be because you're getting a really good bat maybe in return or something. But then you throw in Burns, who I expect to be in the rotation. I had Reds, we did our Reds chat for the top 10, you know, people saying what went wrong with Chase Burns. It's like nothing. I mean, nothing. I know he got hurt. I know he had a not major hurt, but he missed a little time. Then he came back from it. And like, if you watched in the postseason, now admittedly, the Reds, you can watch the entirety of the Reds postseason for 2025. It won't take you long. It was a hi, we're here. Oh, we're facing the Dodgers. It was good to see you. Adios. Good luck, Dodgers. Oh, they're going to go win it all. But Chase Burns was the guy who I came into there for the Reds who was like, that's the guy they don't want to face. That was the guy who you're like, oh, this inning's going to be pretty fun for the Reds. And there weren't a ton of those fun innings. I look at him and say, you know, you've been working on our fantasy stuff in the offseason and all that. I think this is the guy that like really could be a difference maker for Cincinnati in 2026.
Absolutely. It's too bad this isn't the video portion of the podcast, because the Abe Simpson gif of him walking in and then walking out repeatedly would have been perfect right for that moment. JJ, I wanted to go through a couple more players here kind of in the back end. Mm-hmm. Players that we just talked about. Do you feel Mason Morris, you know, draft pick from 2025, does he sort of fit into that profile of those big stuff college relievers that the Reds have had some success in sort of coaxing out of? Because that is a profile that I think every year at draft time, people are like, oh, this guy could move really fast. And then more often than not, a lot of those fast moving college relievers don't move so fast, or more often than not, I think we may have success stories that those guys are better starters than they were relievers. So what's sort of the pathway for Morris next year? Do you see him kind of following in, you know, the same footsteps as Maxwell and, you know, and Phillips and some of these other guys?
I think he's the starter, and then we'll see if he can start. Now, he had a kind of an interesting profile that way. Like, I think he obviously would move faster as a reliever, but I think there are starter traits there. Now, this is when we say, like, what are the Reds good on the pitching side? We should also throw in, if you want to acknowledge, like, it's not all puppies and, you know, and rainbows. The Reds also have really, like, they're going back to a well that has really been a poisonous well for them, which is the SEC pitcher who they take early. Wake Forest pitchers, that's worked out pretty well. Chase Burns moved fast. Rhett Lauder moved fast. Ty Floyd, Luke Holman, Hunter Holland, that's three guys in recent years who they've taken pretty early in drafts from SEC programs who showed real stuff in college and then got to pro ball. And it's pretty much like they have gotten, they know that Goodyear facility better than anyone wants to, because that's where the Reds, you know, like if you're rehabbing, you're in Arizona at their Goodyear facility usually. And they haven't really pitched. And in the case of those three that I just mentioned, like they're not expected to be ready for, you know, opening day 2026. Obviously Morris is healthy right now, but that's where they have struggled with, is they've devoted significant draft resources in recent years to kind of that, they're not their first pick. It's kind of that second or third or fourth pick that they take, but a guy with a prominent pick, a top 100 pick usually, who's then really struggled to stay healthy. But Morris kind of fits into that, where it's like, I would say that you expect him to start, and then you say, okay, you know, is he going to end up as a starter? Well, I think that may also be a little bit kind of dependent on state of the team, right? Like, you know, I think that could play a role in that by the time he's ready. You know, if the rotation still looks like it looks like right now, like, hey, look at what Tony Santion did, you know, and look at what Connor Phillips did and some of these guys. But I do think there are starter traits there if it all kind of clicks. But again, the first thing, if you're a Reds fan, the first thing you want to see is Mason Morse healthy in a rotation opening day 2026. And more importantly than that, because they have had a couple of these guys who did that, and then come May 1st, he's still pitching in a rotation. By the way, along those lines, one other guy that's worth talking about probably along those lines is Sheng-In Lin, who Sheng-In Lin was a two-way guy when they got him. Kind of went out as a position player first and then pitched in instructs, and then they flipped it this last year. And he's kind of interesting. I mean, he's another guy who really kind of stands out as kind of keep an eye on guy. You know, there's a lot more over on him at baseballamerica.com, but like, now the question is going to be like, he's a weird guy from a standpoint of like the upper velocity ranges that we have heard at his best is like, you hear sixes and sevens.
Mm-hmm.
And then then he was having success in starts in 25 at times, admittedly still adjusting to kind of his new pitching regimen, but you were hearing ones and twos. And as good as he was in 25, you want to hear more about the fours, fives, sixes, and sevens than you do, you know, sitting 91, 92.
And we'll get into a couple of sleepers in a minute, but I want to ask you the most important question of this podcast, JJ. Connor Burns is the only player I know of in the handbook, at least as long as I've been here, who has a 20 hit tool. Is the defense really that good, JJ? I'm setting you up. This is like a lob, right?
I mean, this is like, and yes. Okay.
The Chris Paul lob. That thing.
So let's just give you a little bit, give you all listeners a little insight to the geekiness that is Baseball America. I love posting a cut up, like just in the Slack channel of like, hey, check this out or whatever. But if you want to say like probably the geekiest of that is like, hey, check out this. And it was Connor Burns catching 100 miles an hour just below the zone. And you remember it? Like, you remember the video? It's like the best way I can describe it is he's catching that, he's bringing it into the zone, and it looks like if I'm catching like my, you know, like an elementary school kid, right? Like, to say that velocity does not freak him out, you know, he has soft hands. Like, this is like, you almost look like, they gave me a mitt, so I use it, but I could have just caught it with my bare hand if you needed me to. Like, it's that level of the first year after he was drafted, he goes to spring training because catchers, by the way, when you see little minor thing, but when you see this catcher was invited to spring training, it's like, oh, must be a great prospect, whatever. In every organization, the thing you need more than anything else in spring training is enough catchers to catch everybody. So he gets sent to spring training with the big league club to kind of help catch guys. And often there's kind of like a hierarchy that, right? The big league catchers catch the big league guys. The best veteran backups and all AAA catchers and all that catch the next and all that. But in Burns' case, he was catching big leaguers pretty quick. They wanted to throw to him. That's how good he is defensively. At the same time, I mean, offensively, this is the most, the duality of man as we will ever see. It is like, he is so good defensively, and there is, at least so far, nothing there offensively. It's no hitting for average, no getting on base, no power, no bat speed. He's physical. Like, he had that. That was kind of his track record in college. And then he had this great draft year where he had been like a 180 hitter in college. And then his draft year, he hits 300 with some power. And you're like, hey, look at this great defender. And now he hit. And it's like, nope. I'm still just the glove who he's going to stick around for years because he's so good defensively. And your hope is that by sheer force of repetition, if a guy gets 2,000, 2,500 minor league plate appearances, maybe someday he gets to a point where he hits enough to be, you know, able to hit enough to be a backup catcher. That's the question with Connor Burns.
Austin Hedges. You got to get to the Austin Hedges line of offensive production, because I think the glove is kind of there. Could be one guy, could be three. You already mentioned Lynn. Who are some sleepers in this system, you know, after rank 11, that you think people really need to know about?
Okay, so let's go a little deeper than, you know, we're not going to go top of the system or anything like that. We'll go up a couple. I'm going to start with kind of truly off the wall is, this is a guy who, I mean, all outcomes are still there for this guy, right? Like, this is a sleeper. I put him in the 30, but Trevor Kunkel, and I hope I'm pronouncing his last name, but it's a reliever who was in Double A for them. And this is an indie ball find, right? This is the guy who, the way I would put it, one of the things I find interesting now, and I want to get your thoughts on this, especially in the era of 165 player rosters, the dividing line between, like, when everyone, you'll hear people say there's no pitching, there's not enough pitching. When it comes to what I would describe as the triple A reliever level, right? The guy who doesn't have either the secondary pitch or the fastball or the control. He's missing one little element to be like a sticks in the big leagues reliever, but he has either the velocity or this great secondary pitch or kind of one of the other and control to be a triple A guy who gets the call for, like, when in emergencies. If you have that guy, there's a lot of those guys. I feel like that there's more of those guys now than there may have ever been. And there's almost so many of those guys that, like, the separation even between pitches in the big leagues and struggling to get an affiliated job is a fine line. Kunkel is one of those guys who was that, right? Like, he was an indie ball guy who was really successful at that level, really good. Partner leagues, I should say, but partner leagues, independent leagues, an unaffiliated player. And so kind of got like a little bit of a you know, signed, then got released in spring training. Well, the Reds signed him and kind of let him go in double A. And he was really good for them. And again, as profiles go, double A closer is not like, that's not the pathway to future success. Just go look at those, you know, like led the minors in saves. Leading the minors in saves is not a great stat usually, because the guys who are big league relievers don't often get a chance to. They usually don't. They're not pitching the ninth in the minors. They're usually starting, or if they're not starting, they're on kind of a regimen because they're the guy who's going to get called up. But he's a guy to watch because the stuff's real. The stuff's not like, it's legit. And he could very well go from being a guy who was knocking on doors, trying to find an affiliated job, to a guy who gets a big league call up. That would not shock me at all. Kind of an interesting name, you know, kind of at the, you know, further down on this. The other guy that I would say that's kind of a little bit more of a conventional sleeper is Eli Pitts, who was a fifth round pick out of North Atlanta. You're an Eli Pitts guy too? But
100%. I love Pitts. So Pitts, I was like, please say Eli Pitts.
Pitts was injured in his draft year, which kind of meant you didn't get to see the full Eli Pitts as much. 70 runner, 70 grade runner at his best, like really athletic, impactful speed. But there's some hitting ability here too, some athleticism. And you could say like that because of kind of like, again, a little bit of a disrupted draft year, maybe he's a kind of a little bit of a sleeper find. There's risk here, no doubt about it. There's risk. Like, you're getting, you're evaluating a guy based who really didn't get to show you at him at his best in his draft year. But if it all clicks, absolutely, is this a guy who could be an impactful regular? Not just normally you take a guy in the fifth round, and if he can be a useful up and down player or, you know, role player, you'd be pretty happy. This is a guy who has everyday regular in the outfield potential. And so that's a guy who I would absolutely, I'm going to be very fascinated to kind of see how it develops for him in, you know, in 2026, because there's still a lot to be discovered, but at the same time, really interesting in a lot of ways.
He was a top five athletic tester in the 2025 draft class. It's him, Dax Kilby, Landon Vidoric from Cincinnati, drafted by the Dodgers, Jake Cook. And that's Brandon Compton, I think, was right around there too. So like one of the top, I'd say probably three or four athletes in the 2025 class. So really interesting player. You also get Steele Hall in this same draft. I think the Reds are targeting some athletes, JJ. So we'll be interesting to see how those guys all pan out. Any more sleepers, or are we sort of wrapping up the first prospect deep dive?
I think we can kind of wrap it up. I think we can kind of wrap it up. I would say like I do feel like that the Reds, we'll see what this year goes, you know, but making the playoffs did feel like a good step last year. I wrote about this in the overview. If you've got your prospect handbook, you've already read this. But I'll give you a very short summation. For the Reds are a team that if it all goes right this year, could really have a very good season. The thing that's frightening, I think, for them is we've seen this the last 2 years. Their margin of error is quite small, right? 2 years ago, Matt McClain gets hurt. And again, Matt McClain is not like, this is not, oh, we lost Shohei Ohtani. But Matt McClain was a solid regular for them. He gets hurt, misses the whole year. And they didn't ever seem to really figure out a way to fill that spot. You know, last year, they did manage to survive, but Ellie De La Cruz was not himself second half of the season with an, you know, like lower half injury, and sound like hockey there, a lower half body injury. But if I don't want to misquote it, I think it was hamstring, but maybe thigh, with something lower, a leg injury. And they kind of survived it. They still made the playoffs, but like, they don't have a whole lot of margin for error. So like, if everything goes right, I feel like this is an 85 to 90 win team. If everything goes wrong, it's a 75 to 80 win team. And if everything kind of just goes normally, they're an 80 to 85 win team. Last year, that got them in the playoffs. I don't know if there's like a 92, 93 win gear in here with this club, but maybe. if Chase Burns kind of develops into an impactful starter to go with what we already talked about, like you could have, I mean, it's not crazy to think that if he really takes a step forward this year, we're not even talking about Rhett Lauder, who can't fit in the rotation right now, but a Hunter Green, Chase Burns, Andrew Abbott, Nick Lodolo, Brady Singer rotation, that could be one of the best rotations in the National League. Now, best lineups, no. Best bullpens could be a good bullpen, but not one of the best bullpens, no. But rotations are important. And again, we talked about it earlier on this. The key thing with that is, and if you said, hey, okay, but you know that they're not going to make every start all season. And I would go, absolutely, they're not going to make every start all season. But then when you throw in that we talk about like a Brandon Williamson, we talk about Julian Aguiar, we talk about Rhett Lauder, we talk about Chase Petty, we talk about Jose Franco. That's another five guys who most of which will be in probably, you know, AAA, kind of ready to knocking on the door. As injuries arise, they do have other guys who can step in and make starts. And that, to me, does make them a pretty sprightly team, a pretty interesting team as we kind of get ready for the 2026 season to begin.
Absolutely. And that is the Cincinnati Reds Top 30 Deep Dive. It's been the Prospect Podcast on Baseball America. I'm Jeff Ponce. That's JJ Cooper. Thanks for tuning in.